Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Hi there, and welcome to New Life Live. Joining me today, Alice Benton, Dr. Alice Benton. She'll be in a bit. But there already is Chris Williams. Hey, Chris.
Yes, here and ready to spend some time with you, Steve.
Well, I'm glad to be with you. I want to mention something. Yesterday, Mikhail Gorbachev died at age 91. And back in the days of Women of Faith, I was friends with Peter Lowe, who did his own conferences, and he asked me if I would like to go to dinner with Mikhail Gorbachev and Gerald Ford. And I said, yes. And so I went into this big room, and before I sat down, here came Gerald Ford and went around and shook everybody's hands. And then Mikhail Gorbachev came in, walked right up to me, and through his interpreter said, "Have I ever met you before?" Which I thought was a brilliant thing to do when you meet so many people you don't know. He went around the room to every person just like he had to me, and then we sat down, and I got to sit across from him and ask him questions about addiction in Russia and alcoholism. His daughter was there. She's a physician. Great, fascinating, wonderful time with him. But there was a big shot minister that came in, and unlike Ford, who went around the room, and Gorbachev, who went around the room, the Christian guy never acknowledged anybody was there except two people, Ford and Gorbachev. And I just thought, isn't that typical and sad that these guys that don't represent Jesus, they're the ones that make people feel the way Jesus would make people feel. I was able to, you know, just ask him what it was like to be the person that would kind of dismantle the system that had caused his success and had been, he'd been brought up with. And he said it was just what he felt he was called to do. He felt a calling to do the right thing, which I thought was fascinating. Also, he told a story of how whenever he was rising to fame and fortune or whatever in the party, he would always make sure he had a white, clean white shirt and a clean suit. And he would, whenever he went home, he would wash that suit, dry it out, and he would wash that white shirt. When I told that story to Lucy Swindoll, she said, "I wonder what that suit was made out of." Anyway, it was such a privilege, and of course he's really criticized today in Russia, but I really think he was a great man, and it was a great privilege just to get to meet him. And I hope and pray that all of us would have the courage to do whatever needs to be done, even when it's not popular, especially when it's not popular.
And Steve, it's just another profound reminder to me that God doesn't need one, our permission or approval to move and act and execute his will wherever he needs to do it. No. And so it often comes in these surprising places through surprising people, but hopefully it reminds us to keep our eyes wide open for God's goodness in the world.
Amen. If you want to join us, 1-800-229-3000. 1-800-229-3000. 3000. We're going to be here for 2 hours. And second hour, we're going to be talking with Kirk Cameron, brand new movie out. We're going to talk with him a little bit about that. Life Mark is the name of it. I cried after 15 minutes. We'll be back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. Really glad you're with us here today. We've got a repurposed conference coming on. It's a life recovery conference, and I think a lot of people ask that question, can God use me? Can God still use me? Yeah, and we'll help you answer that question. By the way, if you think you're too small for God to use you, Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and God used him. And you can have an impact no matter how small you are if God's called you to do something. And if you don't think small things can impact your life, when was the last time you're laying in bed and a little mosquito showed up, buzzing by your ear? Small things, under the power of God, can have a tremendous impact. And if you want us to help you repurpose your life, no matter what you've been through, well, it's going to be on September 24th. The early bird special ends September the 9th. And please, please come and join us. Also, before we go to the calls, Lumina, people are signing up because of the carpool special or road trip special. I forget which one it is. But if you and three others can fill your car, that's four people, a minimum of four people will give you an amazing price on a ticket, $59. It's about half price. And it's going to be a great time. So look at that at newlife.com. And go to that Lumina banner, and you can find out all about it. We'd love to see you there. The theme is Where Women Rise. Going to be great, great Bible teaching and great, great performance by Nicole C. Mullen and more. I hope you'll join us. Now, let's go to Sally. Sally's calling us from Bellingham, Washington, great state of Washington. Hello there, Sally. How are you today?
Hi, I'll be better after this phone call.
Why is that?
I'm a first-time caller. I've been listening for 23 years. I send you some money sometimes. I've learned a lot from you, and I've read most of the books you've recommended. I'll start with a question.
Okay.
What is the next step in my marriage? Just slight background, no pornography, no gambling, no substance abuse, fidelity on both parts, but verbal abuse and his temper is a problem, and now it got to a real big problem.
Really? What happened?
The situation was on August 14 when my 73-year-old husband of 38 years choked my partially mentally disabled 23-year-old granddaughter briefly, cutting off her airway in his anger. The scar on her neck was present for 10 days. I took photos on days 2 and 3. She has epileptic seizures every hour of her whole entire life, petty mal seizures. Mm. So she's mental, cognitive difficulties. So my husband has finally, at this point, admitted to having a temper that got the better of him. And he's never done anything like this to physically harm someone. His reasons for his actions was to protect me from when this girl was disrespectful, obstinate, and disobedient. He said it was an accident, to which I replied, it's never an accident to put your hands around someone's throat. He did not mean to harm her. He did say my temper got the better of me. He's incredibly remorseful. I've never seen him so remorseful. He apologized profusely. He was upset with himself. He said, I even prayed to God asking for forgiveness and help. 35 years ago, I asked him for marriage counseling for his anger, and he then and many times since has refused. I said I was going to counseling. He said no years ago. I got him anyway in a couple years.
What did you do about this horrible thing that he did? What did you do about it?
At the time, almost nothing. I was a witness. I didn't know what to do.
Have you done since then?
Next to nothing, which is why I'm calling for help.
Okay.
And why my question is, what's the next step? We were in another city.
Hold on.
Yes.
What has he done since that horrible incident? Okay.
Nothing.
So let me tell you, I'm going to ask Chris to give you some insight here. But let me tell you what really bothers me.
There's a lot that bothers
remorse,
me.
Remorse over something like this is really meaningless if it doesn't cause somebody to do something to prevent it ever happening again, which he has not done. So here's my concern. What is going to happen next time? Will he kill somebody in a fit of anger because he got no help? He's already shown what he's capable of doing, which is horrific. And you don't even know whether or not he feels bad because he did this to her, or he feels bad because he looks bad. So something must...
Yeah, he feels like he did it to her because no one else knows
about
it.
Something needs to happen rather than you sit around and wait and see how bad is this problem going to get.
Exactly.
And I'm going to turn this over to... What's that?
I have a plan, but I'm glad to hear your plan.
What is your plan? What's your plan?
My plan is to separate, take a break, to serve the purpose of getting tools, technique, training, help to come back together.
No, let's don't. That's not what I want you to do.
Okay.
I'll let Chris talk to you because that's just going to delay him getting the help that he needs for his problem. It's not your marriage problem that needs to be addressed. It's his anger that is so out of control that he's cut off the airway of a child. So, Chris, what are your thoughts here? I'll let you share.
Sally, I think you're in a more dire situation than you actually realize. Because you said this granddaughter, she's 23 years old, she's severely disabled. Is that correct?
She's partially cognitively disabled.
Oh, partially. So is she now? Is she still a dependent upon, meaning like a legal dependent on another adult, like her parents?
She lives in another state. She was on vacation. We brought her home. She's not around now. She She's on disability in her home state.
Okay, so because what he has done is actually illegal, right? He has committed an assault, right?
Criminal. So assault.
Yes, absolutely. So this is a primary safety issue in which he really does need to feel the full weight of the consequences.
Yes, how do I get him to feel the full weight? Is my leaving with some demands before I come back?
Nope, it's letting him know that you are a witness to a crime.
Okay.
Right?
But also, yes. Chris, if she goes to see a therapist and tells the therapist about this, the therapist is going to report it.
Not necessarily. Because of the age. So it's 23-year-old. So confidentiality is still in place here. There's no mandated report. But again, that we're still talking about something that is incredibly dangerous. And I would let him know that, that separation may not be, I'll go against what Steve was saying, may not be a bad idea, but it's for him to go seek the help that he needs to address this problem.
I think they should separate, Chris, just to be clear, because out of safety concerns. But that should not be the focus. The focus should be, while they're separated, he must get help.
Yeah.
A lot of help.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Alice is in the studio. Alice, what are you thinking?
I want to go back to that reportable issue, because it could be that because of her disability, depending on the level of the severity, it still may be reportable. A disabled adult of any age needs a higher level of protection. And Sally, as frightening as this is to say, we sometimes need to bring legal consequences to bear on family members who are unwilling to seek help or unable, unwilling to acknowledge how severe their behavior is. And so I'd have you prayerfully consider whether or not you would consult with Adult Protective Services, which serves either elderly adults but also disabled adults, for the safety of your granddaughter, even though she lives in another state. You might also have...
She lives 1,000 miles away.
It's more about your husband and his willingness to cross that boundary with a disabled adult. But it's also, of course, about the safety of your granddaughter, although she's not in close proximity. I'd also have you consider contacting the police department and at least consulting about it. Now, I'm not sure about this part of your story, but if your husband is refusing to get help for this, God's design is that the consequences for our behavior would change our level of willingness and motivation when we have a stubborn spirit and a blind spot about our own shortcomings.
Okay, what would be the least consequence to get his attention, the second and the third? I'd rather start with, do we agree you need help, and then before I go to tell anybody about it?
Well, I think you have to be sure that you're safe. When you say to him, I've really been thinking about this, and this happened, and you never ever did anything other than feel bad. So I want you to know that I believe if I don't require you to do something, I'm actually enabling evil. I'm enabling.
It's exactly what I think.
Okay, yeah. Right. Okay, so I'm going to demand.
If I don't do anything, I am enabling.
Yeah, so I'm going to demand that you do some things. Before I demand them, I'd like to give you a couple hours to think about what is it you need to do to help with your anger and rage. And then I'll give you a chance to do it. Otherwise, I'm going to demand some other things. And then if nothing happens, I don't think I have any choice but to report this. Because you are a danger to me and to other people.
No, I don't believe that he is. In 38 years, he's never touched me in anger.
But that's what I'm saying. See, you don't know what he's capable of.
And
that's what I'm saying. You can't assume everything's going to stay the same with you or anybody else. Alice.
Okay.
I'm worried about you, Sally, that you say with such confidence, he will never hurt me. Because the predictor of what will happen in the future is in part what he was willing to do to your granddaughter. And now his reaction to your request for him to seek therapy will add more evidence in one direction or the other. And so if he agrees to get help and makes that appointment and goes to the therapist, if he calls his granddaughter to apologize, if he speaks to her parents to acknowledge what he did and apologize, those are all signs of increasing safety. Resistance.
Yeah, he apologized profusely and he told the child's mother.
That's a very good sign in the right direction. And you need to keep gathering evidence of what kind of a man he's choosing to be at this point. So I'm very glad that he took those steps.
But he needs to do something to repair the problem.
So I approach him and say,
Sally, here's what you say to him.
Okay.
Husband, the pain that you're carrying inside of you is hurting the rest of us. And I'm no longer going to be in the way of the way in which you express your pain and anger. You need to go and deal with your pain and anger with somebody who can professionally help you out with that. And until you do that, I'm going to have to remove myself from the relationship.
And here's how I would start that. Now that I know the full story, I would start with, you know, I'm really proud of you that you apologized.
That's good.
I'm proud that you told her parents. And then I'd say, but you still have all of that pain and venom inside of you. And you need to get help for that. And I don't want to be with you until I feel like you have resolved all of that stuff. So I'd start with what he has done, and then I'd start with what's inside of him, like Chris was saying, and then you tell him he has to do something.
Yeah, that's good, Steve.
And if he doesn't do it, you have a responsibility to yourself, to the world, that you bring someone else in. Adult Protective Services, whatever it is.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. I have a final comment here for Sally. There's something there that needs to be resolved. I don't know what that is. And here's the other thing. I've never met an angry person, male, that wasn't involved in pornography in some way, and I've never met a person involved in pornography that didn't have anger stuff there. So I would be really curious about that. And if there was any of that, in addition to what he's done, then at least every man's battle is there. But I want to tell you, this is just such a great example of how difficult life is. It's hard. It's complicated. And I just ask everybody to pray for Sally in a very, very tough situation, that she'll have wisdom and strength and courage to do the right thing. All right, let's go to Norm. Norm's calling us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Listens on Sirius XM satellite radio. It's channel 131 every day, every weekday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. Hello there, Norm. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. It's always difficult with Alice and Chris together, but I find ways to cope with it. How can we help you?
With the help of Jesus, Steve. With the help of Jesus.
With the help of Jesus, I get through it. Yeah. But how are you? How can we help you, Norm?
I kind of got a different type of question, I just wanted to get your perspective on Freemasonry. Now, the reason I ask is I've been a Mason for almost 30 years, and I see nothing evil in it at all.
Yeah.
But there is an online pastor that me and my wife listen to, and he is dead set against it. He swears it's idolatry and an evil cult, and now my wife wants me out, and I'm like, he's wrong. I'm like, it's not like, I actually, there was a Methodist church that I belonged to, and the pastor was a Mason. We used to go to meetings together, but, you know, it's got me conflicted, you know.
Yeah, I get it.
Is there anything
right
wrong?
Alice has a thought here about what you're saying there. Alice, go ahead.
Norm, how far have you advanced in the degrees?
I'm a third degree Mason. I was a 32nd degree Mason, but I kind of got out of that because the lodge was so far away. I never had time to get there, and it's an extra membership fee. So I dropped that one, but I'm a third degree Mason.
I ask because my understanding is that the oaths that are taken in the higher degrees, although there is some biblically based wording to the oaths, also make commitments
right
to other names that are not clearly God or Jesus Christ. And so my concern is that in a subtle and secretive way, some of the symbolism, the names to which you ascribe your loyalty, and the actions taking, although symbolic, involve a lot of images of death, involve coffins, and involve making oaths. Now, I believe that in the lower levels of Freemasonry, it's a fraternal society that does good and allows for a brotherhood and a sisterhood and community. But the Bible warns us against taking oaths and tells us to be so cautious with our words and our promises that we make. And so I share your wife's concerns that the farther you advance in degrees, I'm not quite sure what people are committing themselves to with those promises that they make.
Now, I've got a perspective
right
here. And my dad was a staunch Southern Baptist. I've told people so staunch that when Coke started being made in cans, my brothers and I weren't allowed to drink canned Cokes because he's afraid people think we were drinking beer. Well, we were drinking beer anyway. But anyway, I'm just telling you, he was a committed man. When he died, they called him Mr. First Baptist Church of Bryan. The choir was full. The church was packed. This was a very dedicated Christian, and he was a Mason.
Right.
All of the things that might be wrong with it, my father would never participate in something that he knowingly knew would replace God or be evil or anything like that. And I think if there is something in the upper levels that you could point to that's evil, my father never did that, and he really thought it was kind of, he didn't go to college, and so it was kind of like a fraternity he never was in college because he didn't go, and he really believed that they did good things, and it certainly didn't replace the church, because I'll tell you, anything that anybody could do in church, my dad did it. He was the closest thing to being the senior pastor without being a pastor. So I'm just making the point that sometimes, even let's just say it was evil or it was a cult, there are people that unknowingly are involved in it. If you have a conscience and you get involved with it and you discover some things, like Alice is saying, that you're asked to make an oath to something that you don't believe in, then don't. But I just don't want to write off every Mason that wants to be part of that group or is part of that group, because they do some great things. I took one of my favorite classes in seminary was about cults, and well, this was in there along with a lot of other organizations. So I don't know. It's a tough one. I just don't think everybody that's in there is aware of anything, or they're not doing evil things. There might be some things that are. I don't know. I'm not a Mason. But it does cause me to wonder.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the new member thank you gift of the Life Recovery Bible personal size, the one-year Life Recovery prayer devotional, the New Life journal, a New Life pen and highlighter, and a New Life zippered tote to hold it all. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. I'm going to find a copy of Toxic Faith. I'll send it to you, Norm. I think that it will help you there. When that book came out, it was on the cover of Publishers Weekly, and I'll tell you, anything that's not of God, I think I wrote about it in that book, and really it's more about churches that are involved in a toxic faith than organizations. But it's a tough thing, and the only point I'm trying to make is my dad sure didn't know of anything that was evil about it, and he would never make an oath to anyone but God. I suspect there are other people like that. And then I know that there are people that absolutely have proof beyond a shadow of a doubt that everything in it is cultic. But my dad would never, ever be part of something that was cultic, knowingly part of it.
And Steve, the inside of all of us is a need and a desire to belong, to be a part of and belong to something. And that's a need for relationship, and it's a need for community. And in our hyper-individualistic world that we live in here in the West, I think we drastically underestimate the impact of the company that we keep, if I can use a proverb in there. And that it's this is a matter of the heart of what are we lending our heart to, and who are we lending our and exposing our heart to, and how does that form us? And I just think it takes some wisdom and some work to be like, hey, whether it's the people I do golf with or some other club or organization that has some sort of formative impact on me, and I got to know what that is.
Yeah.
And we all have idols in our lives, whether it's a fraternity we belong to or my workaholism, my alcoholism, my workoutaholism. We all idolize things. And on a regular basis, on a daily basis, we need to decide yet again, Lord, you are my only master, and I vow myself only to you. It's a constant cleanup process for our whole lives.
Totally.
Well, speaking of ism, Larry Sonnenberg.
Larryism.
Larryism.
He is a helpaholic, and he just helps people, and it's become an ism to him. Larry, what do you have for us today? Thanks for being here, as we've offended everybody we possibly could.
Well, I want guys to sign up for Every Man's Battle next week, but I'm not going to talk about all that. I just a quick reminder. I have a testimony about how this radio program has made a difference. I began listening to New Life on the radio 30 years ago as a young mom of three girls. At the time, I was in a dysfunctional marriage that I kept thinking I could fix. As I listened to the call-ins, I was comforted to hear others struggling with the same things I was. I was struck by the compassion, insight, and love of God the callers received. Fast forward 20 years to the end of my marriage. Listening to New Life continued to be a constant. I drew strength and truth. Around 2010, I went on a cruise to Alaska with New Life. I was comfortable as a single adult as you provided a group for singles and activities. It was at this time I became a Club New Life member as I realized the importance of this ministry. I was faithfully listening to a month New Life, a Club New Life CD when I heard how women who go through sexual betrayal have significant emotional wounds. Upon hearing this, I registered for the Women in the Battle conference. And there I realized many lies I believed about myself and my ex. I'm so grateful to God who has healed me emotionally and including the PTSD in me. I know He's used your ministry to do this. I'm so grateful for your ministry and honored to be one of your supporters.
Well, that's a great, wonderful testimony to radio and how it connects people with the kind of help that they can get. Now, Larry, how can somebody help us best? Just go through the different ways somebody can help this ministry.
Well, the best way is to help us financially. And then come to a workshop and to share your friends about New Life. We're the best-kept secret in the country, I think, and we shouldn't be. It should be on buses and bumper stickers and flagpoles everywhere, and it's not, and you can help spread the word. But the finances are a really important part of it. I always say it's the first domino that has to fall for all the other stuff that we do to take effect.
Well, Larry, one of the things that I've always loved about being part of New Life is that everything you do here, everything we do here, is to drive to the mission. And it's to take the vehicle to the mission of helping people discover, again, help and healing in life's hardest places. Mm-hmm. Partnering with Christ in bringing healing and health to the world. But every vehicle needs fuel, and that's margin. So for us to be able to continue this amazing mission, we need help with our margin. And so we're asking, in partnering with bringing help and healing to life's most difficult places and hardest places, that you help keep that fuel in the tank.
Amen. Thank you. The other thing I liked about this testimony was the way things were woven throughout. She listened to the radio, then she went on a cruise, and she felt safe there. And because she felt safe, she learned about a little bit more about New Life. She joined being a giver. And when she was a giver, she heard the CD. And then she heard about the workshop. And it was just a lot of things woven into that testimony. Mm. So,
yeah. Well, it points to the fact that the most important ministry we do is radio. And that connects people to the other things that we do, and we're getting to do some really great things. And please, if you want to be part of the great things, support us. Help us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Anything else, Larry?
Yeah, one last thought. Yesterday, you introduced Dave Thornton and Wayne Olson to the audience.
Yeah.
And we spent the day talking with on Zoom, having lunch with dinner with different donors. And there was a common theme, and it was these guys, I think, were a little bit surprised. The common theme was it all had to do with radio. Everybody listened to radio.
Yeah.
And radio changed some of them without ever going to a workshop. So thank you for listening. Thank you for giving.
Thank you, Larry. 1-800-NEW-LIFE will send you a copy of either Understanding and Loving Your Bonus Children or Understanding and Loving Your Kids as a Single Parent. That would be our gift to you. Let's go to Lisa, Mobile, Alabama. Sirius XM is where she listens. Hey, how are you today, Lisa?
I'm good, Steve. How are y'all?
Doing okay. How could we help you?
Okay, I have an issue with my son and daughter-in-law. They live with us with my four grandchildren, ages 13 to 4. And they're neglectful of the children, as in they don't go to school. They don't give them regular baths. One of my granddaughters needs to see a dentist. I've mentioned it several times, even mentioned taking her myself. You know, of course, I would have to have their permission, but I don't seem to get anywhere. My daughter-in-law seems to be the block, and I've tried to speak with my son, but he just seems to defend her.
Okay.
Now,
what's the question for us?
How do I talk to them? How do I, in a loving way, there has been trauma with my daughter-in-law and all that. We're the only family she has.
Yeah.
I want to do it in a loving way, but it has gone on for too long, and something needs to be done.
Now, haven't you already done it in a tried it in a loving way, or not?
Not just straight out. I've basically just kind of hinted around or said things like, "Oh, you need to get a bath," you know. And other than just taking it upon myself, I work like 12 to 14 hours a day, so I'm not there to take it up.
All right, so let me ask Alice. Alice has a comment here that she wants to make about this.
Lisa, a couple other questions to better understand this. Do the children attend homeschool?
Well, that's what is said.
You doubt
that
it.
They don't. There's no schedule.
And how long? How long have they?
All night.
How long have they not attended school?
Since right before COVID.
Okay, and is there substance use going on and or high levels of fear about illness and contagion and the kids' safety at outside schools?
I believe there's some marijuana use.
And is there reasoning for not sending their kids to a school outside the home because they're afraid for the children's safety?
It's mostly things that are being taught in school now is the excuse that's given. The mom doesn't have a schedule. She's up all night. The kids are up all night with her, and they sleep all day. And I think
I got to go to a break.
Interfere with her.
Yeah, I got to go to a break. We'll give you some help. I'm so glad you called about this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Many of you heard Chris Williams there talking about coaching. We do have a coaching network and a counseling network. And, I don't know if anybody knows more about it than Chris. He's he's been in coaching for a long, long time, and of course, he's done well while he's been coached. He's coached a lot of other people.
Well, all right. Ironically, I was talking to my coach this morning, and it was super helpful. Good. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be talking to my counselor tomorrow about this time. So we believe in getting help for yourself in whatever way you need to. We've got a great network of coaches and counselors at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, we're talking to Lisa, and we've got a really, really sad situation. It's not just that Lisa knows about kids being abused in the home of son and daughter-in-law. The son and daughter-in-law are living at home. Lisa, why are they living at home with you? Why are they in the house with you?
Her mom passed away. They were buying that home from the stepfather. I'm not sure all exactly what happened, but the stepfather put them out.
And how long have they lived with you?
Since February.
Okay. Do they have any plans of moving?
Well, they said that they did at first. Now, my son sometimes will jokingly say he's home for good. I think he likes the fact that we are kind of there watching out. So,
well, I guess
because
so.
He works as well.
Yeah, I would think so. Free babysitting, all of that. Let's go to Alice first. I want Alice to weigh in on this because there's just all... there are all sorts of problems here that we see. We want to help you do the right thing here, and which is never the easy thing, is what I've found. But Alice, what are you thinking?
Lisa, we certainly share your concerns about your grandchildren, and actually there are quite a few red flags that are waving for us. This is sounding like a situation of neglect. Not getting the medical attention, everything else that you have mentioned could have lasting, very detrimental effects on your grandchildren. And I know that's why you're calling. And I believe that action, swift action, is required. I would invite your son and daughter-in-law to receive help, and I would offer to link them up with a clinician there in your area. If they're willing to get help and quickly, have that appointment quickly. That would be a very good sign of their willingness. And if they are not willing, I think that you need to be prepared to call in a social worker to have the children's safety evaluated because we want to be cautious about assumptions. Maybe they're doing more homeschool than you realize. Maybe your standards of cleanliness are different than theirs. And yet we are seeing significant warning signs that the kids are being neglected.
Yes.
Chris, your thoughts here.
Lisa, I think you're in a much dire situation. I mentioned this to Sally.
More dire than she's aware of.
Yeah, way more dire than you're aware of, because you're housing neglect. You're housing an abusive environment. And we typically think of abuse as a verbal attack, a physical attack, a sexual attack. But neglect has profound effects on people, especially children, and it has to be addressed. And so it sounds like your daughter-in-law is carrying a lot of defensiveness. My guess, you said that she has a traumatic background that's driven by shame. She needs tremendous help. But like we mentioned with Sally and her husband, what is ever happening in your daughter's life on the insides of her that is hurting the children around her. And therefore, Lisa, it actually puts you in a compromised position because you're housing this neglect. It's happening under your roof.
And that has been my fear as far, because I have thought about contacting social services.
Yes,
fear is they would take the children and put them in foster care.
That's a real, and I know that's heartbreaking, and that is terrifying. But Lisa, that's why what Steve is saying is you've got to take action now.
And the longer you wait, Lisa, the more likely it is that you and your husband might be deemed incapable of caring for the kids as well. The best chance of not having the kids removed from your care is to be the one to cooperate with Child Protective Services, to be proactive. And Child Protective Services always prefers a healthy, stable family member rather than a stranger in the foster care system, if someone is there, willing, and capable.
So I think it comes down to this, where you say to son and daughter-in-law, I need you to let me talk to you without interrupting for a few minutes here. I've hinted at certain things, and there's been no response. I'm really concerned about the children. If they try to interrupt, you say, no, I want you to listen to me. I give you a place to stay. You can listen. These children are being neglected. It's not healthy. And I would like to help you develop a plan to where it's all different, like starting now. But if you're unwilling to do that, I'm going to have to ask for some help to make it good and well for these children. I can't have this happening and then know about it and enabling it. And so let's try to develop a plan here. These kids have to be homeschooled. They have to take a bath or shower every night. They have to have a bedtime. We need to bring order to the chaos that they're experiencing. If you don't know how to bring order to their chaos, I'm going to get some additional help to make that happen. Now, you give them a chance to respond to that, and then if they don't, you really do have to call and get some social work help here. And Alice said it. I mean, they'll cooperate with you. They will. And they appreciate you doing something about something that's not right. They want the family. A lot of people complain that they're always wanting the family to stay together when sometimes it'd be better if they didn't, but that is what their ultimate goal is. All right, we are just out of time. Yes, Alice, one final quick comment.
When we look at parenting styles, neglectful is actually the most detrimental and sets children up for the highest likelihood of addictive behavior, violent behavior, and emotional instability. It is a very serious issue.
Yep. All right. Let me give you a little scripture here. Ecclesiastes 3:1 says, for everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. And sometimes it's a time to observe, and other times it's a time to act. And in this situation, I think it's time to act. I will remind you that on Friday, the Lumina car tour, carpool, road trip special, 4 tickets, $59 each for an amazing day at Museum of the Bible with some great speakers. Don't forget that. Don't forget, one of the most powerful things we do is just coming up here, September the 9th, Every Man's Battle in Dallas, Texas. Now, just like you don't want a grandmother allowing children to be abused, I don't want a wife to just look the other way when a husband is involved in something like pornography affairs and things. You call. 75% of the calls are from women first. Intimacy in Marriage is in Dallas, October the 21st and September 24th, Repurposed Love. Join us, 1-800-229-3000.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you. But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.